I am not an expert. I've never published a book or taught a class. I've never even put anything in a quilt show. But I love quilting, and I love talking about quilting. I make a lot of mistakes, but I like to think that sometimes I learn from them and get just a little bit better. If hearing about someone else's goofs and mess-ups makes you feel better about yours, then I've done my job. Join me as we talk about quilting for the rest of us. Hey, I'm Sandy, and I'm a quilter. And I'm going to just get this right out of the way to begin with. For everything having to do with this podcast, everything else, just go to www.quiltingfortherestofus.com. And I'm saying that right at the beginning because I'm going to try to switch things up a little bit this week. Also, another note, by the way, I am recording this on Thursday. Oh, what is today? September 30th. 2010. I'm sorry, I've kind of lost track of time this week because it has been, oh, a heck of a week. If you recall, those of you who are members of the Big Tent group, I did post a notice there. I just was not able to pull off an episode last week. I was out pretty much every night of the week and was going out of town on business early Friday morning, which meant I had a shorter work week as well. So it was just a crazy, crazy week. So I didn't get an episode posted. But I knew I was going to have Tuesday off, so I thought, well, it's not a big deal. I'll just post one on Tuesday. Well, my meetings ended late Sunday night, and the team that I was meeting with over the weekend were all flying out Monday morning, and I was supposed to then have some more staff meetings on my own and drive home Monday night. And I woke up Monday morning sick as a dog. I couldn't even get up out of bed. It was just a miserable day. My roommate managed to get me some over-the-counter kind of medications to help relieve some of the symptoms before she left town, but I couldn't move. So I spent the day in my hotel room, pretty much trapped in bed. I could not get up and walk around because every time I moved anywhere, the whole room would just go into these wild, wild spins. And I thought it was sinuses because while I was there, I was in near Philadelphia and they had a big weather front move in and I get sinusy, but I just thought this was a really severe sinus thing. But I knew there was no way I could sit up at meetings, let alone drive the 6 hours home. So I just ended up stuck in a hotel room. And I'll tell you, I think that's the second, maybe third time in my life that I've been stuck in a hotel room sick on my own where I couldn't get out and get myself anything. It's a miserable thing to have happen. You're just really trapped. Not much you can do. Fortunately, I wasn't really eating much anyway. I did end up getting some takeout delivered to the room and didn't end up eating it, but it still, you know, just, you know, I called home and whined at my husband a couple of times, and he, of course, felt terrible that he was nothing he could do to help me either. In any case, Tuesday morning, I woke up just barely well enough to be able to go finish the meetings I was supposed to have done Monday and then drive home. Okay, technically, probably shouldn't have been on the road. It was still a little head spinny, but as long as I didn't change lanes very often, you know, I was pretty much straight out expressway. I did okay, and I just stopped frequently, you know, took me an extra hour and a half or so to get home than it usually does. But I did get home, and that meant that I had lost my day off, although I took a sick day the next day. I worked a little bit, but mostly was sick. But, you know, couldn't really enjoy a day off when you can't really stand up without tipping over. So yesterday I did finally get myself to the doctor, and it turns out it wasn't sinuses, or it wasn't as directly related to sinuses as I thought. It was actually diagnosed as benign positional vertigo. And I had to laugh because, you know, the word benign just sounds so happy. It sounds like such a happy, amiable thing. And, you know, it really is not. This is not a benign thing. And actually, as we talked through it with the doctor, I realized I've actually had this for years. I just always attributed it to sinuses. It's not usually that bad, though. Normally, I get kind of head spins for a day and a half, and then it goes away, you know, so it's not a big deal. This was really, really miserable. So I'm doing much, much better now. I've been eating at least the last few days. It's just like having permanent motion sickness is what was going on. And that has settled down quite a bit. I am still a little tippy. You know, if I stand up too fast, I tend to lurch a little bit to one side or the other, which is highly entertaining for my family members, but just means I have to be a little careful moving around the house. And it does mean that I really don't trust myself with any sharp, pointy objects at the moment, so I've not been near my sewing machine nor my cutting table. But we'll do more about the Sandy update later. The other, you find your amusement where you can. The other slightly entertaining thing that came out of this is when I went into the doctor yesterday, my usual doctor was not available. So I was seen, first of all, by a resident, and then the doctor that was on call that day. And the resident was explaining to me the particles in my inner ear and how they float around, etc. And she described it by saying, "Well, the particles in your inner ear help you know your place in the world." And I tried not to chuckle, because I thought she was being so earnest in her description, and all I could think was how very existential that was. That'll preach, I guess. It was pretty entertaining. So apparently my head just doesn't know my place in the world at the moment. So anyway, I'm doing a lot better now. I just, like I said, I still have to be cautious about sitting up, sitting down, turning my head too fast, and I can't bend over, and the dogs are a little confused because they'll drop their toy at my feet, and I just have to look at them and say, "Sorry, you got to hand that thing to me because I am not bending over to pick it up." So, in any case, doing better, but it does mean it really, today is the first day I've really been back to myself at all. So, I'm giving myself a little bit of a break and actually have the opportunity to use a treasure of an interview that I got. When I was doing all of those Quilters Like the Rest of Us interviews with members of my guild last May, and those of you who have been listeners for a while know that I've been sprinkling those interviews, most of them are fairly short, throughout episodes since May. But this one really, it needed an episode of its own, and I was interviewing a woman who's a member of my guild, but she doesn't come as frequently, and I'd never really had a chance to get to know her before. This was the first time that I am aware that I was actually on a retreat with her. We may have been on retreats together before, but I'm still just getting to know a lot of people in my guild. And a couple of people had said, "Oh, you've got to interview Pat. You got to interview Pat." And so I asked Pat, "Hey, do you want to sit down with me?" And she said, "Oh, sure, she will." And it was just such a wonderful interview. So I'm really pleased to be able to share that with you today. This interview is with Patricia Smith. She's a history buff. And we talk then about the history of quilts. We talk a little bit about the Dear Jane quilt and the phenomenon, and also Underground Railroad quilts. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to try switching up my order that I typically do. Again, if you've been a listener, I usually start out with listener comments and the Sandy update, and then do the content of the episode in the second half. And what I'm going to start trying to do, and you give me feedback, let me know if you like this. I'm going to switch it up and do the content first. And then I'll do listener comments and Sandy update, etc., in the second half. And that way, those of you who are really only interested in the content can get the content right off the bat, and then you can just turn off the podcast and go along your merry way. But those of you who really enjoy the listener comments and etc., it can continue to listen to the end. So let me know if that works. I was realizing the other day I'm actually at 6 months in this podcasting life of quilting life. So I decided it's time to kind of evaluate and try changing things up and play around a little bit with what's going on to find out what might work better than what I've been doing. So I really do, I'm interested in your feedback. And we'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the podcast, just how you can give me that feedback. So for now, first, what I want to do is turn things over to Pat, and you're really going to enjoy this interview, so let's get going with it. Okay, let's start out by letting you introduce yourself.
Patricia Smith. I am in my 76th year, have been a wife and mother of three children, and a husband who recently, he was a farmer, but he recently passed away 2 years ago. And I have been quilting since about 1987.
Okay. What first brought you into quilting?
I'm a rural person by nature and a history buff all over the place. And there was a class, two classes actually offered, traditional quilting and traditional spinning by the museum, Rochester Museum. I took to the quilting, I think because I had a marvelous teacher and a marvelous class. I fell all over on trying to do the spinning and gave it up entirely, and the quilting stayed with me.
much to our benefit since you're involved with us. What type of quilting do you tend to lean towards then?
I have been full tilt swung to the historical quilt, particularly to the Civil War era, or somewhat earlier than that. Mm-hmm. And that happened when I, being a history buff, I got interested in the Civil War through the movie Gettysburg, then decided to join a unit, the 140th New York Volunteer unit that was a regiment out of Monroe County, and then from there decided to learn what I could about the history of quilting to help the unit have the correct quilt on their cot.
Huh, cool. So you've just been kind of doing a lot of research on your own then in terms of history of quilting and historical quilts.
Absolutely, and I've developed some presentations and I have a modest but I think very good collection of antique quilts. I have one that is an 1850s quilt, one that is an 1820s quilt, three that are Civil War quilts, and then the range after that.
Cool.
I have about 14 to 15. I've been very lucky. An antique dealer sister-in-law gave me many of them, or the dealers haven't particularly cared, and I've gotten them inexpensively. I don't get the masterpieces. That's what they charge a lot for.
Right.
I get sort of the utilitarian, we know she made it the hard way quilt,
right.
Which is those, a pricey.
Yeah, and those, but those almost feel more real, I guess,
absolutely.
Because you know they were used.
Absolutely. One of them that I love was probably made around 1900. It's a checkerboard quilt with red and blue squares and red and black squares. The lady did not have enough cloth to make a whole quilt, so she made one half of it red and blue and the other half red and black. And on the back, she has bleached out sugar sacks and pieced them together for a backing. I think that's a pretty neat quilt. And I find things like that pretty interesting.
Now, I discovered some antique quilts in my mother's collection when she passed away, which I didn't know she owned, and in doing some research, I found out they're family quilts, et cetera, and that's kind of a long story. But one of the things, I took them to Beth Davis to be appraised, and one of the things I was most fascinated by was what you can learn from the culture of the time based on the fabrics and the techniques, et cetera. Have you found that in your own research and experience?
I have, and I have yet to take some good coursework on that. I would like to. I started researching that possibility. But just from reading books, getting a lot of the texts that are out of print, and some of the texts that are now back in print, and finding it's a very complicated story. For one thing, it's multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
You had your English quilters come over. You had your German quilters come over. You had your Norwegian quilters come over. They all brought something different to it. The slave issue was developing its quilt statement.
Mm-hmm.
Cloth itself has been around from eternity onward. So sometimes trying to determine the age of a quilt by cloth it would take more than a Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
It would take a chemistry set,
right?
So it gets pretty complicated, and I feel I've just scratched the surface, and will continue scratching it probably forever.
Now, I think you're working on a Dear Jane quilt this week?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's your experience? Why did you choose to do a Dear Jane? And
It's one of the mystic things about quilting, I guess. The story itself, are you familiar with the story?
Only in passing. I'm not real familiar.
All right. Well, Brenda Papadakis is a quilter and an ex-math teacher, or maybe she is a math teacher, who saw this quilt in picture form and then looked it up, I think, in the Bennington Museum, where it resides, Bennington, Vermont. She was drawn to it, and she was fascinated by it. She asked them if she could draw the squares to make a copy of it, which they allowed her to do. She got hooked. She wrote the book. Other people got hooked. There's something about this labor of love of this farmer's wife in 1863 who must have sat by candlelight and who must have used scraps from all the neighborhood because no square or no pattern or cloth is repeated that I could find. And did this masterpiece in her spare time. And people had gotten hooked on Dear Jane, and she started, Brenda started teaching classes and realized that she had a thing. Mm-hmm. And we had seminars on Jane quilts. They called them Janiacs, the whole bit. I'll bet if you, it may have peaked by now, but I'll bet if you went online and hit Jane Sickles quilt, you or Dear Jane, you would come up with a couple thousand hits.
I know I've seen Dear Jane clubs and such advertised at quilt stores
right.
and that kind of thing.
So I had just hankered after doing this quilt. I finally did do it. Indeed, it does hook you. It took 2 years to do the squares, and that was 10 squares a month, and yet I had to do them before anything else got done that month. So it's one of those mystiques that draws quilters together that I don't think we totally understand.
Mm. That's a good way to put it. So as a historical quilter, I'll give you that label, what's your theory? There's a bit of controversy about the whole Underground Railroad quilt. Do you have a theory about that?
I agree with most of the historical quilters and the historians. There was no real Underground Railroad quilt, unfortunately. We're talking about oral history as opposed to written history.
Mm-hmm.
I have read the book, was it called In Plain View?
Yes, I think so.
And I agree that there's a lot of symbolism, and there could be a lot of symbolism in the African-made quilts, that they perhaps did put in secrets, I'm sure they did, that some of them knew people who had been off the plantation and could map, you know, ask them to make a quilt into a map. I don't think it was done very frequently. I don't think it was done very often. As far as hanging out your quilt that was a log cabin with black centers, I'm ready to bet that that is purely story, that it came later after log cabins became popular with the death of Abraham Lincoln, mm-hmm. and then people started sort of memorializing the Underground Railroad, and pretty soon the oral history came down that these were hung on your fence to guide a slave. Mm-hmm. At that time, in 1850, there was a terrible law called the Fugitive Slave Law. Mm-hmm. And if you were caught sheltering a slave, there was a terrible fine. It would ruin any family, and there was an imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
So if the slave knew to look for black log cabin centered quilts, I'm sure the bounty hunter would figure it out after a while.
That's
and
true.
It would have just been highly dangerous to do anything like that on any kind of a scale.
Mm-hmm.
We have nothing in writing, no interviews, no letters, no books telling all that lead us to believe it actually happened mm-hmm. in any amount.
Not widespread.
Not widespread.
So maybe in pockets, but
maybe a few tried it. But who knows?
Right.
Oral history is probably our least dependable history.
Right.
Somehow each generation seems to change it just enough mm-hmm. that it comes down to us as the myth of the century mm-hmm. that never really happened.
So you've done a lot of research, obviously. You're very articulate on history, on quilt history. Do you have a couple of favorite sources that you'd like to, if somebody listening to this is really intrigued mm-hmm. by quilt history, what would you recommend for them?
Well, I would say, once again, the old texts that are on fabric and coverlets that are available, that you could probably find old texts in our used book online, and also some are in reprint. Barbara Brackman is a favorite of mine. Barbara Brackman seems to be a very level-headed quilt historian, and I own most of her books. And I would say that most of the history, Civil War and historical, are decently responsible books.
Mm.
So I've gotten what I've learned so far pretty much from looking at quilts and judging them from the books. I'd like to get steps beyond that, but I haven't quite acquired that yet.
Well, thank you very much. This has been really intriguing, and I could talk to you for hours about this. Like I said, I'm just starting to really get into that world and find out how interesting it is. So thank you so much.
You must take a look at my Circuit Rider quilt. Did you see that?
No, I have not seen
that. I was going to quilt it this weekend, but Jane was slower than I thought. I would love to show you that.
Could I take a picture of it and post it on the blog with the,
perhaps,
with the podcast?
Yeah,
that would be great.
At the moment. Yes.
That would be great. Thank
Let's
you.
Let's go dig it out if you'd like.
All right. I will do that. Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Pat. I really do enjoy, I enjoyed the interview when I did it, and I enjoyed it again listening to it today, getting ready for this episode. It was just a lot of fun. And I do have some photos of quilts that Pat had made that I took at the guild meeting, and I will post those with the show notes to this episode. I do also need to say that I believe, and I will try to get confirmation from Pat about this later, but I think she told me she's actually doing Dear Jane by machine. And her comment was, if Jane had had a machine, she would have used it too, which I really appreciated that. I think that's true. I think sometimes we get so caught up in trying to do things authentically that we forget, you know, that those folks would have loved having the modern elements that we have today. I'm not knocking doing things authentically. If I maybe someday in my future I'll try piecing something by hand. I don't see it happening anytime soon, but I don't write anything out. So, anyway, you will see pictures of Pat's quilts, and she's done a very nice job with the things that she's done. They're beautiful quilts. I have a couple of announcements that I want to start out with. First of all, thank you so much to Katie, aka Quilted Magnolia, for organizing the first ever QuiltCast Supergroup Block Swap. This is a block swap that's open to all members of the Big Tent QuiltCast Supergroup. So, if you're not a member yet, quick! Go join, quick. The last day to sign up for the block swap is October 31st, and the blocks will be due January 8th, 2011. The block design being used for the swap is named Tilted Four Patch, and the block pattern is available at the link for the block swap, along with directions about fabric choices, size of block, etc. And the difficulty level that Katie gives to the block design is beginner. Which I concur. I'm not just saying Katie's crazy. She's saying this is beginner. It is. It's a beginner block. It's a four patch that's tilted, and then there's a template to fill in the square with, you know, kind of elongated triangles around that tilt. I'm not describing it well. Go to the link. You'll see it. What I mean. Katie also says this is a stash busting swap, and we're all in favor of stash busting, so that's a great thing. So, for more information about the block swap, join the Big Tent QuiltCast Supergroup, and there's a link to join on the right-hand side of my show notes page at www.quiltingfortherestofus.com. If you're already a member of the Big Tent QuiltCast Supergroup, just check the discussion forum in the QuiltCast group for reference to the block swap. It looks like an awful lot of fun. If you have any questions, post them to that forum, because I'm not the one running the swap. I won't be able to answer your questions. At this point, I really, really want to do the swap. I just have to assess where I'm at with my UFOs that I'm desperately trying to finish before the end of the year as well. So I haven't entirely decided myself if this is in the picture for me. But I did check it out. It looks like an awful lot of fun. And I'm probably right around 50% there to join. In any case, join Big Tent QuiltCast Supergroup, or if you're already a member, go check out that block swap, and let's see how many people we can get doing the swap. If I can't do it myself, I still want to see the pictures. I've gotten just a ton of comments over the last several days, so unfortunately, I can't go through and respond to everyone. I'm sorry, I really love doing that, but I'm also not about to tell you to stop commenting so I can have a workable number to respond to in my podcast, so I'm just going to have to hit some highlights. The first, and this could actually be in the realm of announcements, in my Quilty blog, I had posted a few entries back now, a link to a video that I had found on another blog of George, and I'm probably not going to pronounce this right, Siciliano, who does absolutely gorgeous miniature quilts. Check my blog. Again, it was a few entries back. It won't be too far back, maybe three or four entries. But anyway, in a comment to that blog entry, Euclid314 says, wanted to make sure that any of your Western New York readers / listeners who were impressed by the George Siciliano photos know about this. The Batavia New York Quilt Guild is hosting George this fall. This appeared in our Amherst Museum Guild newsletter. Quote, the Museum Quilt Guild in Batavia, New York is holding their quilt show Stitches in Time on Friday, October 15th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, October 16th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at St. Anthony's Community Center, 114 Liberty Street, Batavia, New York, 14020. Admission is $5, only $4 for members with Consortium Travel Club booklets. this is my own editorial. I don't really know what the Consortium Travel Club booklet is, but just be aware if you've got it. If you know what it is, that means you probably have it, and it's only $4 for you. To continue in the article, there will be vendors, a boutique, a silent auction benefiting the VA Medical Center patients, a raffle quilt, and door prizes. Featured guest will be George Siciliano, who does wonderful miniature quilts. He will give a lecture at 7 p.m. Friday, $5, and workshops on Friday and Saturday. For further information, contact via email, SHAR, all one word, at empacc.net, or visit museumquiltguild.blogspot.com. And I will post the link to that blogspot, the Museum Quilt Guild blogspot, on the show notes to this episode. So any of you who are within reach of Batavia, New York, be sure to visit that event and check out the lecture with George. And I just want to say, I think it's the height of rudeness to plan such a wonderful thing on a weekend. I'm out of town on business, so I can't go. I'm very disappointed. Anyway, here's a shout out to your event. Hope you get a lot of people going there. And thank you so much, Euclid314, for letting us know about it. In response to my post about finishing the quilt I featured in episode 17, in which we save a quilt from almost certain destruction, and I'm going to reference that again later in my Sandy update, Debbie posted a wonderful, wonderful comment that I'm going to read it to you because I actually read this. Somehow I didn't see this comment until the day I was sick, and on Monday when I was stuck in the hotel room, and early in the morning I just couldn't read email, I couldn't focus on anything, but by evening I was starting to be able to focus a little bit, and I read this, and it just tickled me, and there wasn't much that was tickling me at the moment, so I just want to share it with you. This is from Debbie. I conceived the idea of the quilt the moment that my daughter and future son-in-law announced their engagement. It would be an heirloom to be passed on through the generations, a work of art crafted from gorgeous fabrics, intricate patchwork, and, as my favorite quilter Diane Godinsky would say, stitches that were simply lovely. The fact that I had never before made a quilt, knew nothing about how to make one, nor had ever in my life known or seen anyone who had ever made one, did not seem, at the time, to be an insurmountable obstacle. I believed that by picking some fabric, stitching some seams, and quilting in my rocking chair, I would create a treasure to present to my daughter on her wedding day. Are those tears of laughter in the eyes of all of you who quilted at your grandmother's knee and built your skills over years of immersion in the craft? Or are they the tears of dashed hopes of all those whose naivete, blind confidence, or hubris led them to a similar dream of creating a masterpiece? Or maybe they are just tears of exhaustion because you have been up all night quilting. It is not necessary to recount all the times when my dream faltered on the reality of my lack of skills, knowledge, money, and time. I chose beautiful Asian fabrics to commemorate the betrothed's travels to Japan, yet chose a block pattern whose numerous small pieces did nothing to showcase them. I had to redo each block at least 3 times before I truly understood the tyranny of the scant quarter-inch seam. I assembled the blocks in straight rows, then took the entire quilt apart and used an on-point setting. I attempted hand quilting, then machine quilting, and then machine embroidery. I got permanent marker on a pale yellow setting triangle, attempted too vigorously to remove it, and had to reconstruct a whole section of the quilt. I used metallic thread that got so jammed in the sewing machine that I had to pick out 3,000 tiny stitches and again reconstruct a portion of the quilt. But I did not quit, even though countless times that seemed to be the most rational strategy. The dream of an heirloom had dissipated with visions of perfect feathered wreaths. At least I could present to my daughter my first quilt. Humbled by flying geese and squares within squares, I could run my needle toward that simple goal. And now it is finished. I would never show it off at my local quilt shop, its myriad flaws too obvious to lay bare before those miracle workers who can run a business, raise their families, and create quilt after stunning quilt. Yet I have developed a fondness for it, and have come to see that it is the flaws which make it a perfect quilt for a newly created family. Like a marriage, this quilt has been through false starts, disappointments, setbacks, and heartache. It has weaknesses and shortcomings. The consuming passion of its inception has flowered into a plodding determination to keep going, gratitude for small victories, and willingness to laugh or cry and start over. The miracle of tiny scraps of fabric coming together to build a thing of utility is a fitting metaphor for the miracle of two strangers coming together to build their lives. Here is a quilt for the dog to jump upon which young lovers can picnic, and under which a child can snuggle or build a tent for their dreams. That's a pretty good heirloom, after all. Thank you, Debbie. I just absolutely loved that. It was just wonderful. Thank you. Robin emailed me with all sorts of kind words. Thanks, Robin. And by the way, in regards to my fast talking, Robin says, I found myself trying to quilt as fast as you speak. The deadline for the quilt she was working on was Thursday, and I made it with you at my side. Thank you. I didn't know that was an unexpected benefit of my speed of speech. She also gave me her opinions on sergers, and she offered these couple of tips that I wanted to share with you. Robin says, my friend Beverly came up with an idea, both of us with deadlines for our quilts, what to do with scraps of cotton batting. You know, the ones that are too small for anything. When you highlight your hair, use those underneath the layers of hair so it doesn't spread to the lower layers of hair. All right, Robin, that is a new use for batting that I had never heard of before, so you go. It sounds like a good one. Robin also says, once you have decided which UFOs that you want to keep, take those UFOs and projects and make a spreadsheet with listed items. I listed at which stage they are at, started, pieced, top, backing, quilt, bind. And when completed, I move to the top of the spreadsheet and have the completed items by year. It's nice to see how many are completed since many, most, end up as gifts. So thank you very much for those ideas, Robin. And Kate emailed me in regards to the episode I did about teaching children to quilt. She says, I know the holidays are a busy time of year, but if you've got some in their 20s that you want to involve, maybe having a Christmas preparation weekend in October or November would be one way to strike up interest in quilting. That would work for the smaller kids too, because even at 11, my daughter still likes to give us things she has made. So that's a good idea, is to kind of have a Christmas kickoff weekend by doing a, you know, Christmas gift preparation weekend in October or November. So thank you, Kate. And if any of you take that suggestion and take pictures during the event, please send them to me or post them to the Flickr group so that we can all see the fun that you are having. So thank you also to all the other commenters. New listener Claudia from Munich. First of all, shout out to new listeners. Woohoo! Thank you. And shout out to Munich. Woohoo! That's a new one. I haven't heard Munich yet. So thank you, Claudia, for being in touch with me. Also thanks to Anna, a.k.a. Noni, a.k.a. Lady Rags, and Lynn, and Sandy of Quilt Cabana, and Tine or Teen, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce your name, T-I-N-E, who, by the way, noticed similarities of Hawaiian quilting to symbols and colors that she's experienced while she was in New Zealand and Maori quilts or Maori symbols. And I'd really be interested in seeing some pictures of what you come up with when you do finish your project that you're working on. Kate, who agrees that I should get prizes for going on college visits. Thank you very much. Also, thanks to new commenters, Sue and Lisa, both of whom I've linked up with through Creating the Hive, which is a social networking site for crafters. Thank you, Jay, for inviting me to Creating the Hive, and the rest of you should check it out. Just Google it. And also thanks to Jay, speaking of, for your comments as well. And Catherine, Rebecca, Dot, Debbie of Chester, Victoria, Cody, Marumo, who, by the way, you still haven't told me how to pronounce your name, still knowing I am slaughtering it, so please let me know how I'm actually supposed to be pronouncing it. Mary, Sarah, Sally, Caroline from the UK, who is simply waiting for her one-year-old niece to get a little older so she can teach her to quilt. And I say, who needs to wait? Give that girl some fabric to chew on now. Denise of Pennsylvania, who also has the Marnie Michelle log cabin ruler sitting in her drawer waiting for her to test it out. So Denise, here's your use it or lose it challenge. Test them out. Send me pictures. And Kim T, who, thank you, loves my owl. And to know what that means, you're going to have to check my blog. And also to my sister Di, who was, as big sisters always are, a little snarky to me in her comments. Thank you, Di. What else? I think that was all the commenters. If I missed anybody, I apologize. So again, thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to everybody for commenting in all the various places you can comment now. This is a quick later addition because I forgot to mention it earlier. On the last episode, I posted it in both audio and video version because there were photos of quilts that I was talking about. I do want to assure you that's not going to become a habit, mostly time. I just don't have time to do video podcasts. And I know some folks had trouble with the video. That's why I did offer it in both forms, because video doesn't always work. That all depends on your computer setup and what kind of software you have, etc., etc. I was interested to see from a stats perspective, actually more people did download the video version than the audio version. So that was an interesting little test market. But I did just want to let you know, I reserve the right to do it again in the future if, you know, if I'm doing an episode that's so heavily reliant on looking at pictures of quilts. But other than that, it will not happen all that often. So don't worry about it. This is still mostly an audio podcast. So thanks for playing along with me in that particular experiment. I also don't have much of a Sandy update to give you. Obviously, been out of town, been sick, so not doing much. I did last night manage to get the label printed for my sister's quilt, but I don't actually have it attached yet. You know, using the, I print my labels on computer fabric and then applique them to the back of the quilt. Someday I will remember to do that before I actually quilt them. You know, it took me years to read an article that said, you know, put the label on the backing before you quilt the quilt. And that's one of those common sense things that you just feel like slapping your forehead and saying, well, duh, you know, I hadn't ever thought of it before then. And now I never think of it in time. And so I'm always stuck trying to figure out how to get them on there afterwards. So I've got a little bit of hand sewing to do tonight. I'm going to fuse it down like I usually do. In the past, I've just used fusible, but I don't trust that that's really going to stay on there over years of washing. So I've got this one I want to hand applique down as well. So I may get to that tonight. Not entirely sure how I'm going to feel when I'm done. The log cabin that I've been working on, again, check my blog. I've been kind of posting progress on that. That's using the Marty Michelle log cabin rulers as part of my Use It or Lose It challenge. And I have all the blocks done. I have it laid up on my design wall, so I just need to get them pieced together. And that's really all I want to get done at this point. I'm not going to worry about finishing that now. I want to get my other UFOs finished first. So I know it's irony to be making myself a new UFO while I'm in the process of finishing others, but it is what it is. So anyway, I'm hoping to maybe get some of that done, at least by the end of the weekend. Other than that, I have just been reading quilt magazines. I've bought a lot of them. I got a lot of subscriptions. My subscriptions came while I was out of town, so I've been basically kind of holed up on a couch or in bed, reading, dreaming of quilts, you know, quilting in my head, as we call it. I have a few entries in the You Know You're a Quilter When category. I keep thinking, you know, gee, I've had that page up since I started the podcast practically. Maybe it's time to give it a rest. And just about when I start thinking, okay, I think I'll take it down, come up with something different, I get a slew of new entries, and they're also entertaining. So I haven't taken it down yet. So anyway, you know, at some point I will change it up. But for now, we're still enjoying it. So for this episode's entries in You Know You're a Quilter When, Jill says, you know you're a quilter when most family dinners have to wait until you finish cutting on the kitchen table and batting scraps have to be whisked off the chair seats before they can sit down. From Lisa, you know you're a quilter when while driving down the road with your husband and he says, hey, did you see the 5 deer on the side of the road? You say, no, but I see that fabric store about a half mile down the road. Apparently we all, you know, we live in the world through quilt-colored glasses, I guess it would be. From Christine in Texas, you know you're a quilter when you diligently use your calculator while grocery shopping so that you can come $10 under budget and buy the 2 quilt magazines sitting in your basket. And she says, Mama feeding 7.5, to which I say, God bless you, Christine. 7.5, that's impressive. And from Susan, and this is a good way to end, from Susan, you know you're a quilter when you've stopped listening to the radio and news programs on the way to work and only listen to quilting podcasts. So thank you, Susan. Okay, so remember, you can sign up, you can subscribe to the free Quilting for the Rest of Us newsletter that goes out monthly. Just got one out this past weekend, so there will be one going out in another 3 to 4 weeks. And you can join the Big Tent Quiltcast Supergroup, and from there then you have to join the Quiltcast Supergroup first, and then you can join the Quilting for the Rest of Us subgroup. You can also check out the Quilting for the Rest of Us Facebook page, and you can join our Quilting for the Rest of Us Flickr group and follow me on Twitter at Sandy Quilts, Sandy with a Y, Quilts with a Z, and you can email me at sandyquilts@gmail.com, Y and Z. You can follow my Quilty blog, which is different from the show notes to the episode. And the good thing is, all of that stuff is linked at www.quiltingfortherestofus.com. So thank you very much for listening to this episode, and I will catch up with you again next week. So until then, go get your quilty on. Quilting for the Rest of Us is dedicated to Shirley. Love you, Mom.